Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 219, and we are beginning just the briefest glimpse of The Sunlit Man by Brandon Sanderson. Paul, how are you?
Great. I've enjoyed reading the first two chapters of The Man on the Moon, and all has been well.
I'm trying to think. I think the last time we covered two chapters was that one episode in at the end of Oathbringer, where there's that chapter that's 2 hours long on audiobook or whatever, and we covered two chapters in one episode. But other than that, I don't think we've only covered two chapters before. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. I really enjoyed the first two chapters of Sunlit Man. Even just picking up this book is rather unique. I mentioned before, as we were kind of looking ahead to it, that the black pages on the side, like, it's just so striking. You pick up this book and I don't know. I need to get a better like display case bookshelf in my home, because I guarantee you anybody that looks at the bookshelf, like, their eye is going to go straight to this book before anything else.
You know, you say that. It's actually really hard to display Sunlit Man correctly, because I just have it next to the other Secret Projects. You can't see anything cool about it if True. You display it like a normal book. I don't know how you'd show off it having black pages, but
now I don't have an answer for the black pages, but I know Alex and I have our bookshelf, and then she actually, you know, kind of in the middle, the way you have what, I can't tell exactly which Mistborn book that is, but one of them is, a couple books are turned like face out like that in the middle. And Sunlit Man is one of those. Sunlit Man and Tress have both made that cut, since they look so striking and pretty. I think Yumi as well. I think we had those three Secret Projects facing out, because just the cover is gorgeous. But you can't see the black pages, which would be really cool to highlight.
There you go. Okay. We have a very brief glimpse at our hero and a little bit of the setting around him. So let's roll intro and then get a brief summary of the beginning of Sunlit Man. Okay, Elliot. Two chapters. Was it 15 pages total?
A little further, 23 or something like that. Chapters are slightly longer than like Tress. Tress had some really short chapters. But yeah, summary of the first two chapters. So we drop into the middle of the action. Nomad is our character. He awakens on this planet, whatever it is, right in the middle of what seems to us to be a catastrophe. You've got this sun rising over the horizon, which, Trevor, you chuckled when we were joking about it, and then sure enough, here it is. We were saying, you know, our first brief glimpse of Sunlit Man, and Paul and I were like, oh, okay, so it'll be the, like, just pre-dawn man. Well, yeah, that's actually right where we pick up, is right before dawn, where the sun is coming over the edge of the horizon. But turns out it's the most violent and destructive sunrise you've ever thought of or imagined, and it just scorches the living heck out of the land and burns everything. And there's people around Nomad who are apparently executing some prisoners of some kind and chaining them up and leaving them behind in the just absolute blaze that is this sunrise. Nomad can't speak their language because he doesn't have enough investiture. So he's trying to figure out what's going on, and they're not really having it. So they try to chain him down. He escapes. We'll talk about the how and the magic that he's using here as we kind of analyze into it. But he's able to kind of escape with them. They run off to this flying city, which I guess is where they live, and it's able to kind of travel across the planet and stay away from the sunlit side of the planet, you know, stay in the shadow so you don't just get absolutely fried by whatever crazy violent sun this is. And he gets there and gets confronted by these people who have embers in their chests. Like they've got like a crater in their chest. They're missing a good portion of their chest. And instead of a heart, they just have this exposed cavity with this glowing ember inside of it. Very ominous and interesting. And that's about as far as we go.
Sounds good. All right, Paul, I have the outline split into two separate parts. Nomad and everything else around him. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I want to talk about Nomad first.
Okay.
From the title of the book is Sunlit Man. From the very beginning and probably throughout the whole book, my questions are going to be, who is this? I'm making the assumption this is going to be somebody that we might know, or at least connected to people we might know. Something like that. I'm trying to figure out where he's from, all these things. He mentions skipping. Was that the term that they use?
Skipping,
which was interesting to me. I'm going to come back to that. He mentions skipping. Seems like he world hops all the time. Like he's always skipping to these other planets. This is the planet he's currently on. And I noticed, thanks to Trevor's hint, I think, from a previous, I don't remember when we talked about this, but whenever you're trying to figure out where somebody's from, maybe to key in to their swear words.
Yes,
their indeed. Expressions they use. And that was something that did catch my attention on here. And Nomad does use the term storms multiple times. Well, I heard it at least twice. So I have to think that Nomad is from Roshar. We've talked about this being Stormlight adjacent, so that could make sense. But I'm pretty lost. I have another prediction that we'll talk about maybe with the planet. But as far as Nomad, that was the number one thing I noticed. You know, storms. This seems maybe more advanced. I think he references several things, like technology things. I say that, and now I don't remember a specific example, but I thought he had. And he seems like he really knows his stuff about the Cosmere. I've never heard breaths talked, like Investiture talked about in these like BEUs, things like that. Like, it feels like he's very knowledgeable, knows a lot. Also, okay, I know I'm saying a lot of things. We can unpack this more. Something I wanted to bring up, the group of people he's running from. Like, he mentions this group, I think it was called the Night Brigade. Is that what it was called?
Yep, you're right.
The Night Brigade. Do y'all have, Elliot, do you have any thoughts on the Night Brigade? Who is that? Is this another term for the Ghostbloods? I feel like there's a lot of Investiture coming into play here. Is that someone we're going to learn about? I have no idea who the Night Brigade is. And I don't have any, assuming I shouldn't have any definite guess, but I don't have a definite guess on Nomad, who he might be. I do have a guess, but I'll talk about that afterward. I'll stop talking.
I do have guesses, multiple, for who Nomad might be, but we'll tease it out here as we go. We'll get into why. To answer your direct question on the Night Brigade. Yeah, we get a lot of stuff thrown at us quickly in these first couple of chapters. A lot of things that are making me think already. This was a very thinky first two chapters of a book. Night Brigade. Yeah, I definitely keyed into the Night Brigade. I was actually most intrigued by the fact that it seems like, you talked about it, Paul, that Nomad is a world hopper, that he's skipping to lots of different planets to try and evade the Night Brigade. But what initially confused me is that this planet seems to have a whole like night and day thing going on. You got to stay out of the day and you got to stay in the night or you're just going to get fried. Night Brigade seems to be very fitting with this planet. But is that just a coincidence that he's being chased by the Night Brigade from a different planet onto the planet where night is important? Seemed like maybe just a coincidence, but that was kind of throwing me for a second. It was hard for me to remember that Night Brigade is not these like ember chested people that are not too thrilled with him showing up. It's somebody else from elsewhere chasing him down. Also, one last thought there before we dig into some of this other stuff. You mentioned Ghost Bloods. I think we've learned by now, we've read enough Cosmere to know that if you're going to be world hopping, Ghost Bloods are somebody you might want to be looking out for. But I also keyed into the same thing you did of this guy seems pretty Cosmere aware, maybe very Cosmere aware. He probably is going to know who the Ghost Bloods are, or maybe have heard of them or something. And so I would expect if the Ghost Bloods are chasing him, he would just say Ghost Bloods, and that Night Brigade is something different. It's my first thought.
I'll key in here and say that the Night Brigade is a new term. You haven't missed something. Could it be a new term for an old organization? Yes, but you haven't heard the term Night Brigade before. This is not some precursor reference that you aren't picking up on. So I'll go ahead and say that. And then, yeah, Paul, you mentioned BEUs. There are a lot of super nerdy Cosmere fans who have been asking for a standard of investiture for a really long time, and Sanderson finally gave it to us. So fairly quickly, if you haven't realized already, this book is set pretty far in the future from most of the stuff we've already seen. Where it is in relation to Tress, I don't know. We've already seen Tress is fairly future as well, with a rocket ship launching off at the end of the book. So where Sunlit Man is exactly, we don't know. Maybe we'll know after that timeline comes out that I mentioned in the other episode. But this is fairly far in the future. They're using, or Nomad is using, the term BEUs with his buddy Auxiliary, which we'll talk about him in a second. But yes, we finally have a standard measured unit for investiture, which is, I don't know, exciting for some people. Some people don't care.
Ooh, this nerd over here is super excited. You're talking my language now. Give me some units. We can start doing some math. I literally already did start doing some math. In fact, they tell us that he's got 1,500 breath equivalent units. And they also tell us that that's about 8% of skip capacity. So push up your glasses on your nose and pull out your calculator, and we can do a little quick math to tell us that 20,000 BEUs is what you need to do a skip. So we got some numbers. This is good. They tell us later that he needs 2,000 BEUs to manipulate connections. So he's like just short of being able to connect himself to the planet and learn the language. I then remembered something else. Remember this book? Warbreaker. Mm-hmm. It has been a long time since I've dug this book out and read about what Shallan was up to. I mean, Lightsong was up to. In the back of this book, do you remember in the Ars Arcanum, there's a little chart that shows you like what you get with different breath levels. And there's a nice little table that shows you 2,000 breaths gets you agelessness. And what do we got else here? 200 breaths gets you perfect pitch and color recognition, all these things. I think it's stated somewhere in here that this is like approximate breath equivalence, and maybe it doesn't quite line up like one-to-one with this chart, but it's probably pretty close. So now we can actually start correlating abilities through breaths to investiture. I'm actually really excited about this.
Elliot, I jumped to that in my brain as soon as they mentioned 1,500 BEUs and he needs 2,000 to connect. I was like, I know there were levels in Warbreaker. They refer to it as levels of heightening, right? Mm-hmm. I think there were levels of heightening. And I really wanted to look into that. I did not pull it up myself. But I wanted to ask, since you have it there, what are like the highest ones that it has listed?
Oh, yeah, I went there too.
It talks about the highest levels. And like, I think Sasebron, right, has, you know, like a billion breaths or something. And he's of the highest heightening. But I wanted to remember where the cutoff was and what it says you might gain.
Yep, I was thinking down this thought train as well. So quick little refresher on breaths out of the Ars Arcanum from Warbreaker. So the heightenings, like first, second, third, fourth, up to 10th, are kind of associated with maybe some arbitrary numbers of breaths. So like third heightening is 600 breaths, but 10th heightening is 50,000 breaths. So the heightenings are kind of like just marks in the sand or on the chart of like, probably according to the abilities that you get, I guess. Yeah. So what do you get when you go super high? So you get the interesting thing about this Ars Arcanum is it's very specific to the types of powers that we see in Warbreaker. So like Awakening and Command are the things that you see in here. It doesn't go outside of that. So you get things like Command Breaking, Greater Awakening, Audible Command, Color Distortion, and Perfect Invocation. I don't know if the words here actually talk more about what Perfect Invocation means. But then, oh, here we go. Awakeners of the 10th Heightening can draw more color from the objects they use to fuel their art. So it's very like colors and awakening specific. But then there is a note in here that reads that's like very little is known about high levels of heightenings. And it is very untested and unknown what is possible at the highest levels of breaths. And so I almost wonder if this book is like a springboard off of that comment of, aha, what just might be possible when you are really invested?
I'm really glad you read that. See, that just has my wheels turning. It fully makes sense. In Warbreaker, all of those heightening levels are very relevant to the story and the characters on that planet, right? I'm really trying to think about this. So I am maybe overthinking it because this is breath equivalent units. This is, as Trevor mentioned, this is kind of our standard term for investiture, but that those levels will probably kind of line up with the heightenings we see in the Ars Arcanum there. But I guess this has me wondering, like, is Nomad's goal only to gain the breaths he needs to reach skip capacity to bounce and go to another planet? I assume that's his primary goal. And it sounds like he's been doing this for a long time. It sounds like he's been running from the Night Brigade as long as he can remember. And they're always hot on his tail. He's really hoping he could get further ahead and then maybe get a moment to relax.
Yeah, it's his name almost seems like the biggest understatement ever. He's Nomad, which I think of like, you know, peaceful wanderer who just kind of meanders around. Now this is like fleeing from the guys that are trying to get you all the time is the vibe I'm getting. Like he lands on the planet and his immediate thought is, where are they? Where are they behind me? They even like, so he gets arrested kind of ish at the very end of chapter 2. And he's like grateful. He's like, oh, finally a prison cell. I might be able to take a nap. That sounds fantastic. Like this dude apparently just on the run constantly.
Yeah, I also noticed that. And also one of his first instincts, I don't know if you guys really caught this, one of his first instincts in these chapters is, where's the investiture? He's looking at the ember people with the embers in their hearts. He's like, oh, they probably have investiture. He's looking at the sunrise, like, that's a really bright sunrise. I bet that has investiture. He talks to Auxiliary. Auxiliary's talking about investiture. So immediately, Nomad is talking about, okay, where I'm at 8% skip capacity. Where is the investiture? Where can I get more? So, yes, constantly on the run, even more intensely than you guys might be insinuating. Like, he seems to think that the Night Brigade are right behind him, like about to skip right where he was a second ago.
So, we teased it a second ago, and I want to go ahead and go for it. Who is this dude? I have two thoughts. We get some clues. Roshar, he's using our Rosharan swear words. He thinks about some things clearly in kind of Rosharan comparisons. There's a few references that definitely sound like stuff from Roshar, like creatures with red eyes and things like that. First guess. Rosharans have this thing for names. Well, let me rephrase. The Vorin have a thing for names. where I'm thinking of like our, well, this is kind of wider across Roshar too. Like the heralds, they have a name and then they have like six different versions of their name that are kind of similar. What is not that far from Nomad? Noadon. Think about it.
Like phonetically, or what are you talking about? Not that far from.
Just then kind of the type, the letters that are being used. You can just about make the name Nomad out of Noadon. Think of our heralds. They kind of have like just slightly jumbled up names that are different in the different cultures.
You can also think of, to add to this, Elliot, what isn't, you know, Noadon wrote the in-world Way of Kings, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't there like the famous quote, like, I walked from a Bama bar to your theater or something like that? Mm-hmm. He's been a wanderer for some time, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you could say even before, you know, his days came to an end.
Maybe that's actually like a mistranslation of the Way of Kings. Maybe it actually is, I skipped from a Bama bar to your theater.
And with all these different planets that ended up back at your theater.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
Well, he probably started with a Bama bar, and then he was like, well, I could do that. Now I want to try even further. And that's when he found out about skipping way later on. Mm. Kind of discovered it. It's kind of his thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, hold
on. I have a question for you guys. I'm going to tell you by the end of the episode. Do you want me to tell you now and then we can talk about it? Or do you want me to let you throw all your theories out and then I tell you?
I've actually already solved who it is, so that Noadon is not my final answer. Noadon is the, I wish it was this, and I've got a few clues to tie it, so I'm going to hang on to it for a second, but I have a second guess, which is actually my serious answer.
Okay. Yeah, I would like for us to run through our theories.
Okay, that's fine.
Before. I was going to say, Elliot, what's throwing me off, I think, off the scent, and why I haven't really put my finger on someone. I have maybe a guess, but I don't know. All in all, I do not think I know. What's throwing me off is the time frame, because I think Noadon is honestly a really fun guess, but I'm like, we know, like, unless this is investiture post-life Noadon, right? Like,
bro, Yasna was dead for an entire book and then just blinked back into existence. So don't start telling me that Noadon can't come back.
Well, and while that is true, we really know what happened with Yasna. Yasna, I think, is not the right example. Kelsier, on the other hand, might
be a better
example. Like that's a more relevant example. But
you guys just read a chart where it had agelessness in the chart and. Mm-hmm. It had BEUs right next to it. So ageless, the time frame should not be what you're being, should not be holding you up, Paul.
That's fair. That's true. Anyways, I have a couple guesses. The way that, okay, here are my two guesses. And these were pretty off the cuff, not certain, but my best, most educated guesses. One I thought of, which I don't know how or why, but I thought of Zyle. I thought of Vasher because Nalthus, like original planet, I guess, of Nalthus. I can understand the even being from Nalthus using storms as an expression because he's lived a significant amount of time on Roshar. I could see it. Also, Elliot, I have another guest too, but Elliot, you mentioned that you have your serious guest. Do you think you've solved it? Because if y'all seem awfully confident of like, yeah, this is who it is, duh. You know, like, can't believe you'd miss it. I didn't have that definitive of a guess.
It's definitely not like obvious duh, but I found two clues. Two clues that I want to tie together into my actual like prediction as to who this is. So I was trying to find it actually, and I couldn't quite find it. So I'm going to go off memory. He's got dark skin. So he says in here that he has dark skin, which a lot of our Rosharan characters do. So that doesn't, you know, narrow it down incredibly small. Does point me in a few directions. There's an offhand mention though about I think he was trying to, at one point he's musing in his head about, I used to be so serious, but now I've gotten better at cracking jokes and appreciating the levity of situations. My old master would be proud of me. I know there's not much there, but we do know of a dark-skinned character in our Stormlight Archive books who has referenced his old master a couple of times. And he's actually in Bridge 4, and his name is Sigzo. So
I see.
That is actually my based on those two clues, which I know is not a lot, could easily get disproven, but that's my running actual theory. As much fun as this would be, as much fun as it would be for this to be Noadon, I think it's actually Sigzo.
Interesting. See, that is really, I'm really impressed with you gathering that. I was thinking about like the old, my old master. I did try to think with that, but I couldn't really put my finger on someone. But the more you elaborated, I'm like, that does certainly make sense. I definitely also, like, remember Sigzil talking in that manner.
The rest of that thought process fits as well. Like, Sigzil that we know is a pretty serious guy. Wit, yeah. And Hoid is not a super serious guy, except for those moments where he needs to be, and then he is. So I could totally see that the wit of Hoid rubbing off on Sigzil, and then now here he is later down the road.
You are correct, Elliot. And the only reason why I'm going to come out and say that is it's revealed to you with like next chapter. So we don't need to be like spinning all sorts of different things, but you're supposed to pretty much assume this is Sigzil within the next, you know, several chapters. So with that said, I was very excited when we got the preview chapters of this. I think we got 1 through 5 when we got the preview chapters, maybe 1 through 6. And by the end of that, it's definitely confirmed for you that it's Sigzil. So when I got my hands on this preview chapter, this was the secret project I was most excited for, because jumping however long in the future and watching Sigzil run from the Night Brigade, who's the Night Brigade? I have no idea. But I was very excited to get to learn about future Sigzil. But because this is a member of Bridge 4, Paul's going to be like, meh, we can write this book off. I don't care about Bridge 4.
I will say Sigzil has always been my favorite Bridge 4 member, like aside from like Kaladin, you know, like the Bridge 4 team. It's like Sigzil and Rock were my favorites.
Okay.
Interesting. And it definitely like, you know, he's a world singer. Maybe he's really just Cosmere singer now, you know?
All right. Yeah. World singer. What else do we know about Sigzil? At like the end of Rhythm of War, what's Sigzil doing? Do you guys remember?
Isn't he in charge? He's like in charge of the Windrunners.
He is commander of the Windrunners. That is correct. I believe he's third ideal at the end of Rhythm of War.
Which brings us to...
Does he have a spren, like a specific spren that we've seen? Because I guess maybe that's what we're seeing now, but that's what I was thinking. I remember him and several of the others being like squires, like Windrunner squires. We learned all about that. I didn't remember him as having his own, like being his own independent Radiant. Maybe that's something I've forgotten.
I wanted to go back and look and didn't really get a chance, but I had the same thought. I remembered him being, I think I remembered him being full Radiant. I couldn't remember his spren name, because here he's definitely got some kind of spren thing that can turn into shard chains and crowbars and things like that. So did he already have auxiliary back in Rhythm of War days? I didn't get a chance to go look, but I should.
Here's your cheating answer. He is third ideal Windrunner. His spren, which he does have by third ideal, he has his own spren, is not named for you in Rhythm of War.
I want to point out one more thing about the name and all of that. Could be this same person. I'm assuming this is a Spren he's dealing with. This seems like very Surge, Bindery, Night, Radiant kind of stuff going on here. So I'm kind of running with the assumption that this is just a straight up, he's a Night Radiant of some order and he's got a Spren. But Auxiliary is not a very honor Spren kind of name. There's other orders of Spren that have like weird mechanical computery types of names. And Honor Spren is not one of them. So
you are right. Honor Spren have like actual character names.
Yeah. And
there are other
Honor Spren have like fairy names like Silfrenna and
Fenderana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is he no longer a Windrunner?
Wait, so Trevor, just double checking, you gave us the confirmation that he is a Knight Radiant of the Third Ideal, not specifically a Windrunner.
He is a Windrunner. At the end of Rhythm of War, he is a Windrunner. He's the commander of the Windrunners at Third Ideal. That's the last time you've seen him. With an unnamed Spren. It does not name you the Spren. Here, he has a Spren named Auxiliary. He asks him to form a blade, and he can't.
Yeah, he's... So now we got to talk about the Torment.
The Torment, yes. Is it capitalized?
It is capitalized.
Okay.
It is capitalized Torment. And he goes to tackle somebody, or he goes to punch somebody, and he freezes because the Torment is blocking him. He goes to summon Ox as a blade, and ostensibly the Torment stops him from doing that. Although it's a little unclear exactly what's going on there, because at one point Nomad gets a little mad at Ox and says, well, come on, man, I need you as a blade. And Ox is like, I'm not the one stopping you. And wasn't clear if that was like a sarcastic, you know, oh, that's your fault, bro, not mine. Or if that was just simply a, you know, maybe more mechanical computer, oh, your Torment is stopping at me and not me from doing that. So I was actually curious how that character is read in the audiobook.
Paul, do you want to tell him? It can throw you for a loop if you're not ready for it. Do you remember how Auxiliary is read?
No, I'm trying to remember this. I listened to these chapters twice, but I don't know if I remember or if I know what you're referring to.
So Auxiliary is read in like this perfect monotone voice, and he talks in what, like the third person or the second person to Nomad.
Yeah.
As if he's the Knight Radiant talking to his squire.
I was going to ask about that. Because that alone confused the heck out of me the first time he said that, because so Auxiliary has this like, he's talking, but he's also like doing a running commentary at the same time.
He's like narrating. Yes.
Yeah. He's like narrating the scene to Nomad in his head. But yeah, he refers to the knight and the squire. And the first time I read it, a couple of those lines, I just thought I misunderstood. But by like the third or fourth time, I was like, wait, he's referring to himself as the knight and Nomad as the squire.
Yes, he is.
I'm confused.
I am also confused. I was also, so we mentioned the Torment. Is that the reason why he's not able to be a blade? He mentions that at some point that like he can get a tool, like a tool of some sort, but not a weapon specifically.
So, yes, let's talk about the Torment. He goes to punch the cinder-chested guy in the face. He locks up and falls over. And Nomad blames the Torment. Capital T Torment. And then later, yes, you're right. He's trying to get free of his chained bonds as they've chained him to the earth and the sun's coming over the horizon. He tries to summon a blade to cut the chain. It won't let him. The Torment won't let him. And Nomad makes an exclamation like, I don't know, to himself or whatever. And he says, my oaths are supposed to counteract the Torment. And Auxiliary says, what oaths? Did you guys catch that?
Yes, I did catch that. And am struggling to tell whether Auxiliary is asking like which oath in particular, like of your oaths, or if he's really like, what do you mean? You've never said an oath, like these oaths or something like that. Like, is it because he's not at the far enough ideal, really? Like, he should be. I'm a bit confuzzled by Auxiliary's stuff. Was this like a second Spren? Like, not the OG one?
I was asking specifically about, like, how the character is read in the book, too, because you can read these lines a lot of different ways. And my initial read of them, like this line in particular, Trevor, that you're referencing, the what oaths, it says, I'm sorry, Nomad, but what oaths? I read that almost accusatory, as like, ah, yes, your oaths would save you if you had any, you know, kind of thing. It's like
that's how it's read in the book.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is this like a... Is there any possible way? Obviously, a lot has happened from where we know Sigsil to this. So it's very possible that there are many things that could have happened. I don't know if that's something we will figure out. But I'm like, is it possible that he had... Like similar to breaking the original Oath Pact that we've seen, like in as a historical event on Roshar. Sorry, not the Oath Pact, but like the what's it called? All the Night Radiants give up and break their bonds with their spread.
The Recreants.
Yeah. Is it possible that Sigsil across this period of time at some point broke the bond he had with his Windrunner Spren, has bonded a new Spren, but isn't of a far enough ideal? Like has not spoken the right oath. He's like, yeah, I used to be able to summon a Shardblade, but he doesn't have that Spren anymore, and now he can't because he doesn't have the oaths of this other one. I feel like a lot of time would have to pass for this to have been the case. And I'm not super convinced, but I'm just trying to figure out what the heck might be going on. This will probably be answered pretty quick in Stormlight 5 if we see him talk to a spread and it's not Auxiliary.
That's a good point. There's a couple other bits here factoring into this too. You ask about, like, is he not at the right level of oaths or ideals? I think that's a really good thought. And then I think back to, like, he's at the same time summoning his Spren to be stuff for him, which that doesn't happen until a couple of ideals in, given the rules that we know from before. So, like, assuming those rules, he would be at least somewhat far enough down that path. But then there's another line, which I think is interesting and weighs into this. This is like right when he's trying to summon the blade to cut the chain, but instead then later realizes he can summon a crowbar. He's like freaking out. He says this is Nomad first. That light is going to kill us. And then Ox replies with, point. It is going to kill you, my poor valet. I am already dead. So Auxiliary's already dead? That doesn't seem to quite line up with our way we've seen things in the past either.
But correct, he can be summoned in different forms.
Right.
Because previously, a Deadeye Spren could only be summoned as a Shard Blade.
Exactly.
As they were dismissed, yes.
And the Spren seem to make a big deal over the whole, I'm alive, I'm dead. Dead is not how we originally thought of dead, right? You know, Syl died and kind of came back later, right? But it's still very important to the Spren, oh, that's a Deadeye Spren. And I'm an alive Spren. So... what's up with this guy?
A lot of Roshar terms being tossed around on this podcast once again. It sounds nice.
We're back.
It is kind of fun. It does feel like we're back. Speaking of being back, I imagine that this will be thwarted right away. And you're going to be like, no, it can't be that because this or that. It'd be super unfun about it. But if we want to kind of switch to the environment or the planet.
Sure.
I can't shake the thought that this is Braze or Damnation, as it's known on Roshar. The problem I have with that as a theory, well, first I'll say why I might think this is. One, it seems very fiery and tumultuous and dangerous and bad. You know, it doesn't. This is not a planet I want to go visit. Second, on the topic of Roshar, Stormlight adjacent, you know, that is something that is directly, you know, mentioned and things like that, right? They talk about Damnation. We know that our heralds go there and are tormented. I'm like, I even had a theory that maybe this was Talonel or something, but then I remembered timeline, didn't think that was right. Anyways, that was my thought. Other than that, if it's not Braze, it's liable not to be, then it's just some planet we've never seen, and that's fine. My understanding is Braze is like completely covered in fire and like really like nothing. But we've never really seen it, so I don't know.
So I won't swat down your theory, but I will clarify something. You're referring to Braze as the burning planet, which is actually incorrect. So there are three main planets in the Roshar system. One is Roshar. The second is Braze, which is actually described as cold, like very, very cold. And then there's Ashen, which is the burning planet, which presumably, this could be wrong, but I think Ashen is the planet where the humans came from before Roshar, and they accidentally blew it up with surge binding. Oops.
Yes. Yes. That's the one I'm thinking of.
That's what you're thinking of. Yes. Okay.
I don't have any further explanations as to, you know, why there are people living here and why they have gemstones in their chests and singed bodies. Yeah, I don't really have much else for you, but there's my theory. There's my prediction, I guess.
I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. It seems to maybe have a few points in common with, yeah, what we know about that planet Ashen already. So I'll definitely be on the lookout for that going forward, because that one intrigues me.
I also thought the same with the preview chapters.
He says cryptically, not about the rest of the book.
The knight says cryptically to his valet. Yeah, okay, so we have a large sun. Nomad makes assumption that it's invested. Auxiliary makes the observation that the planet they're on is rotating extremely slowly. Elliot, I thought of you when I read these preview chapters like a year ago or whenever I had got these. Or 2 years ago. When I read these, the planet has rings on it, like orbital rings, like see in some planets in our solar system. And then the planet seems to be rotating extremely slowly. And then I'm not sure if you guys caught the atmosphere pressure line. Elliot, did you catch or Paul, did you catch it?
Yes, I mentioned that they say to Nomad, that the people who kind of capture him, they say to him, like, oh, your body must be acclimating to the, like, I think it's like low pressure, or essentially like the opposite of an airsick lowlander. I think that's how I thought of it, is like there's oxygen is plentiful, if you will. It was how I was thinking of it. Maybe that's the opposite, but they're like really like below sea level, if you will.
So, altitude. Yeah, Nomad makes two observations about air pressure. One is, as they're flying off and running away from the sun, they fly extremely low, like 10 feet off the ground. And then there's a point where they reach about 30 feet off the ground, they increase their elevation, and his ears pop. Did you guys catch that?
I remember the ear popping. I didn't think about that. That seemed like a random experience, but he's experiencing moment. I did not think about the impacts that could have on the air around him.
Yeah, so there's something very odd happening with the air pressure, and then obviously the elephant in the room, the big sun, peaks over the horizon and then scorches everything that it sees.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The speed of the rotation caught my eye, and I started to think about that a little bit, because as soon as they started to describe, oh yeah, we're hopping on our ships and we're outrunning the sun, I was going, oh man, okay, if you're on an Earth planet, you gotta be booking it, like really booking it. It just I had to look this up. I didn't know this off the top of my head, but if you're at the equator on Earth, the sunrise essentially moves around the planet at the speed of about 1,000 miles per hour. Which is kind of crazy to think about, because if you're like standing there watching the sunrise, it sure doesn't feel like the line of the sun is coming at you 1,000 miles an hour, but it absolutely is. Like try hopping in your car and like outrunning the sunrise. Like, oh no, it's going to catch you real fast. So 1,000 miles per hour. Then they explain, or Nomad kind of observes that, oh, clearly the planet must be rotating very slowly. And I think, yeah, he's absolutely right. In order for that to even be possible, the planet has to be moving, rotating quite slowly.
Or
they're flying 1,000 miles an hour.
Okay. Option three.
If they're up next to the poles, it would be different.
Okay. I guess there's more options than I thought.
You're for option four now?
Option four?
This is where you tell us, Trevor.
Planetary mechanic, Elliot. You can do it.
I don't know where you're going with this.
It's not a normal circular spin. It's like a...
The planet is very small.
But that doesn't change the speed, right? The rotation speed is still like...
The rotation speed is slow.
Like, I guess there's less ground you have to cover. However,
right. You're on like a tiny moon, right? Does that check out?
That's a good question, actually. I have to think about that. I guess you're insinuating that if it's small enough, it's got more curvature, so you don't have to go as far to get away from the viewpoint of the sun.
That is what I'm assuming.
I could have to be way small. Maybe that's possible. But yeah, no, like moon-sized is where you'd have to be for that to matter.
Like small moon size, yeah.
Right. In which case, gravity would be weird. Yeah, maybe. I'll have to think about that as we go.
One thing I want to bring up also talking about the planet. So I think Nomad is the one who thinks this to his head. He's like, okay, if the sun is absolutely heat scorching the planet they're on, you know, absolutely scorching it, shouldn't they create like absolutely perilous conditions on the dark side, like on the opposite side as well? It's mentioned that, like, no, there's not. You think there should be. Is that just a question? Is that just a thing, like, you know, Brandon has put in his books, like, for the meteorologists out there, like, here's how this works on this planet, to like cover his bases regarding weather and things like that. Is this just one of those where he's like, yeah, here's this detail, don't worry about it. Like, this planet is fine. You know, hypothetically, if Earth was like this, yeah, on the backside, there'd be tons of, you know, unsafe weather conditions or something. There'd be all sorts of stuff. But this one's fine. Is it that, or is there something more to this?
I think there's absolutely something more to this, because Nomad, this dude kind of seems a little bit like a detective. If I guess if this is Sigzil, he's still got his kind of scholarly analytical brain going, because he's getting beat up and he's still like, I wonder about the economy of this place and where they get their food, because that'd be really hard if you're on a flying city, like, as he's getting beat up.
And even in that same scene, he tells himself, no, stop thinking about it, turn that part of your brain off, because you're leaving. So yes, Sigzil is, the real Sigzil's down there somewhere. He's just turned it off and trying to ignore it.
But all that to say, there's a lot of things that don't quite match up here. He's looking at these flying city that is barely holding itself together. Where are they getting the fuel to power a city like that if they're so poor that they can't even have, you know, houses? And how do you grow food when you're on a flying city like that with no sunlight? There's just a lot of questions. It's like, okay, I think something else is going on here.
I actually have an idea about the fuel part, at least. I don't know about growing food or things like that. There may be a similar system, but this actually fuels into Trevor's thought on what if this is a small moon and planet, right? What if, you know, as you're going around the surface of this planet, what, you know, he mentions the light is likely investiture, like is likely a source of investiture. I have no idea. This is full speculation. I'm imagining their city, their transportation is fueled by investiture, as everything seems to be. Are there like investiture pods or things that they're like, I could see it where they're like leaving them, like they leave these pods every so many miles, and as they cycle around the Earth, they pick up the pod that was last charged by the sun, they go, they get the other one, and they're just, you know, in this rotation, right, of picking them up, dropping off other ones to be recharged by the sun, and going in a cycle. I don't know how you begin that cycle, like back in history, whenever that happens. That's my biggest doubt to this theory. But I could see something like that working. But that's, that is genius. A good question. Well,
I just want to say I'm proud of you. You are using your brain in the right avenues.
Oh, thank you. Wow. I was expecting, I'll give myself a little pat on the back. Yeah. That's the only thing I can think of. I'm like, the light is the investiture, so it's how to use that. I think, honestly, the thought for that just came from how they use the high storms to charge things and, you know, invest their spheres on Roshar. They leave it out, they go and hide, and then after the high storm goes by, they do the stuff.
But instead of the high storm going around the planet, it's them that's going around the planet. Like,
yes,
wow, I guess that's so. Kind of a flipped on its head. Interesting.
I will say, I'm sure there's a reason for this, and it will probably come up. Nomad mentions, like, why don't people live in caves? Like, why don't they just make caves or find caves or something, live there? I wonder if the heat is, like, too immense still that you can't really do that. But that was a great question. I was like, why don't you just have, like, a cave or try to build a shelter? I'm assuming that it just doesn't work. They've tried that or something. But that is my only guess, that it's just you just keep stopping at gas stations and dropping off these pods or whatever that fuel your stuff. I don't know why anyone would live here. Like, I'm like, I'd use this energy to go like find a new planet, you know, like
I'm gonna go back to Tress's planet. That place sounds a lot nicer than it did when we were there.
But also, as I say that, if that were the case, let's say they have, I don't know, Their machine that they use to travel on takes 4 of these pods fully charged and goes 500 miles. I don't know. If you're able to make a bunch of whatever these pods are that store investiture, this is a gold mine for harvesting investiture. Think of if you're
look
if,
at you as go,
many,
Paul.
As many of these pods as you're able to make, that's how much investiture you could get. Like, oh my god, you could. As many as you can make, you're just bundling and getting so much investiture because the sun's going to go around and it's going to fill everything because it seems to be a completely relentless, unending source of investiture, right? Like, you could absolutely farm that like crazy, and as many of those as you can make.
So Sigsel needs to run back to Roshar, grab some spheres, jump back over, leave them in a pile, and then run around
the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run around the Earth. Remember where they are. Go
grab them.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I really like that train of thought, Paul. That's ingenious. You're already thinking like 3 steps ahead of where we're at in the story. I'm just trying to figure out who Nomad is, and you're already thinking like, ooh, how can we exploit this planet and use it for the future? You're thinking here. Just to add on to your theory, maybe another enabling fact for this. We know of one way to get ridiculous amounts of investiture, and that's to open a perpendicularity to the spiritual realm. What if this sun, if you're not watching our YouTube video, I'm doing my air quotes to emphasize that maybe it's not a sun, it's a like opening directly into the spiritual realm, and it's just like dumping obscene amounts of investiture into sunlight, and it's scorching the planet that way.
Elliot, I thought the exact same thing, and that's something that also fueled into my prediction of maybe this is Ashen or whatever the planet is that was destroyed by, quote, surge binding.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's because they opened a portal to the spiritual realm? They opened up this investiture perpendicularity, and it was just... I mean, how else do you destroy a planet by surge binding? It's got to be something pretty cataclysmic.
Yeah.
It's got to be something pretty crazy. That's the only thing I could think of. If you open it like that and it just, you know, destroys everything, I could fully see that happening.
So instead of a sun, it's like a perpendicularity satellite that's actually orbiting the Earth, or orbiting the planet they're on.
Mm-hmm.
Is the sun orbiting, or are we spinning, or both? Do we know that? Because in my head, it is like, you know, okay, what? Earth rotates around the sun and spins, so probably pretty different here. I it's still unclear to me what kind of astronomy we're working with. Like we talked about, if it's a moon, are we rotating around something else? We're spinning slowly. I don't know. In my head, this could just be one opened perpendicularity. If it is a perpendicularity, that it's not rotating around us or something like that. Like it's there. We're either just spinning in place or orbiting it. I have no idea. I don't need to speculate on that too far, but
the astronomical answer is it depends. It depends on how big all these things are, where they're at. A lot of things are possible, especially if we've got more than two bodies orbiting around. The three body problem is famous for being difficult to predict.
Do you guys remember Yumi? Where Sanderson gave us 50 some odd chapters giving us planet theories about how you could see the other planet from the planet, and it was like eclipses happening permanently. Turns out they were just next door neighbors. Elliot, you mentioned an offhand comment that you wanted to go back to Tress's world with how dangerous that was.
Yeah.
Before the Seeker Projects, our two most dangerous planets in the Cosmere were like Scadrial and Roshar. And compared to Yumi, Tress, and now Sunlit, those look like walks in the park compared to those three planets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's true. It's a pick your poison. Which planet do y'all think you'd rather be on?
I mean, if we're talking post-apocalypse, like after the story's over, Scadrial or Yumi's planet seem pretty cool, but if we're talking like during the story, no thank you on either one of those.
Cell seemed pretty fine. I mean, there's a lot of problematic people on Cell, but if you can avoid them, the planet seemed fine.
Yeah. I should specify, I was asking about between the three secret project planets we've looked at. I think Yumi's seems the best, even though there are nightmares and stuff. But at least you could like live in town and maybe avoid them. It's not the world that's going to kill you. It's like a creature that might kill you, you know?
True. All right. The last thing for today. We've got the creepy Ember dudes / women. And then we have somebody else who also has an Ember in their chest, but more specifically, his eyes were glowing. And Nomad describes it as something that reminds me of home, but it's less the corrupted eyes or the red eyes of a corrupted soul and more like something was burning inside of him. So I don't know what that did for you guys, for your guys' mental image, but that changed it from the deep red of a fused to more like the glowing orange of a forge is what I envisioned. So less red and more orange. Is that what you guys envisioned?
I keep getting images in my head of like embers. They keep using that word ember, but I think of like, you know, a piece of paper. You light your piece of paper on fire and then maybe you like blow out the flame, but it's still kind of sizzling or burning a little bit, but just like this faint glow right along the edge. That's described in a couple of places. Like their clothing is like kind of lit like that. Like the edges of their clothing is kind of slowly burning. He actually describes one of the buildings like that, of the edge of the building has this kind of glowy scorchedness to it. So it's almost like everything was just very recently on fire.
Yeah.
All the time. It's like that.
So Paul, like you were saying, if you can harness it, seems like we've got some cool batteries on our hands. If you can't, you're on the run permanently.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking. What I'm thinking about now, the last thing I'm curious to talk about is who are these people and how are they? Like, are these people who were once not singed? Or have they always been? Is this like a race? But it specifically, it's, I mean, it talks about, like, it sounds like their heart has been replaced by these embers. The people, I think, here are the biggest question I have going forward. I think I can, you know, we'll probably find out more about the planet and how it works. I think that's fine. We'll probably learn more about Nomad, maybe the Spren. I think that's great. My biggest part that I'm really puzzled by is, who are these people? How are they the way they are? I'm pretty lost on that. That's going to be a Rafa moment, I assume. Second of all, sorry. Go ahead and talk about that. I have another thought regarding the end of the book, maybe.
I was just going to weigh in and say what it reminds me of, this seemingly artificial something inserted into your body to give you powers. It reminds me of hemallergy. Of you've got something sticking out of your body in a place where you wouldn't normally, and you have magic powers. It kind of sounds like, not quite Inquisitor kind of thing, but getting a little bit of that vibe, maybe.
I just had another thought. So while I hear what you're saying, Elliot, it does maybe seem like a hemallergy thing. To me, it seems more like an animated thing or a like command thing. Because it seems like what I'm trying to wrap my head around is, it's not like they had a heart and I've like shoved this ember in here and maybe that's giving them investiture powers or something. Their chest has been like carved out. Like the ribs have been cut. Like it's like a carving out of the center of their chest. And I'm like, you would surely be dead. I don't know. In my head, I'm wondering. Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. In my head, I'm wondering if there is some leader here who has like 500,000 breaths and is like commanding people or imbuing people or something of that nature is more of what I'm thinking, which I don't know if that could be true, but it could be some like, I don't know, not to reference Tolkien too much, but like Aule creating the dwarves, but they don't like have the flame imperishable. They don't have like their own free, you know, but they are like a creation, like a living creation, but kind of not created by an Adonalsium figure, not created like with full purpose or capabilities that could, you know. I'm a bit puzzled. I think that's a bit far-fetched and probably not what's happening. But I feel like this is something different. I feel like this is something that has been done to these people. It could be hemallergy still. I'm the more I think about it, the more I'm probably getting lost down a rabbit hole. But I feel like they're being controlled in some way.
I did not think about this until you started talking. What you just described, the word that kind of came to my mind with everything you're saying there is automaton. And where does that word take you? We've got a shard in the Cosmere named autonomy. And autonomy has an army of men of red and gold. What color theme we got going on here? Yeah.
I was just about to say, I was trying to think on this further. I was trying to think of what would the motive be for, I don't know, either creating or taking over a group of people to be your little servants or something. What would make sense is if you wanted this to be a mass investiture farming thing on a perilous mm-hmm. planet that you're not going to be able to hire someone to do. You're going to make your own army to do this. I think that is very likely or possible that it is an autonomy thing. I could very much see that.
I have little to add to your theory, but I'm not going to tear it down either. I have two things to point out to you guys. You guys may have recognized this when we created it, or maybe not, but when we commissioned our art piece last year, I put a small Easter egg in front of Sigzil. There is an orange sphere on the table in front of Sigzil in our commissioned art that's just been sitting there. I just wanted to point that out as we move into this book. Secondly, elephant in the room from the other two Seeker projects, Hoyd is not narrating. Prediction from either of you, is Hoyd in the book at all? And to what extent? Are we finally going to get a Sigzil-Hoyd interaction?
See, whenever I realized that Hoyd was not narrating, I thought, what if this is Hoyd? I had that thought for a moment. We're just okay. Seeing from his perspective. But it was way too not Hoyd to be Hoyd. So, I mean, I think if this is as adjacent as it is and as maybe informative as it is, I think, yes, we will see Hoyd at some point. I have no idea what capacity that might be in. The other secret projects, he was a coat rack and a cabin boy. So no telling. No, absolutely no telling what he might be. This is far, to my knowledge, far in the future. Maybe he'll be a bit more, I'm not going to say regal. I don't think regal would be the way, but I'm wondering if we get Hoyd, if it will be a bit less ridiculous and unserious and a bit more down to business Hoyd, maybe.
Maybe some deadlines are coming up for Hoyd or something like that.
Yeah, something.
I'm enjoying the not Hoyd narrator. Not that I didn't enjoy the other two, but it's just kind of a nice change of pace to have a narrator that isn't so distractible, I guess. But I'm liking the book so far. Will Hoyd be in it? Yes. I think we might have a running theme with the secret projects that Hoyd is cursed in each one. He was cursed in Yumi. He was cursed in Tress. I bet he's here, and I bet he's cursed again. I think we will see him. I don't know that we're necessarily going to get like a Sigzil-Hoyd reunion. I bet Hoyd is going to be cursed in his own little way, dealing with his own problems. He'll either be a smaller cameo in this, or it'll be like a Sigzil doesn't even know it's Hoyd kind of thing. That's my thought, my guess.
Sounds good. Anything else?
That's all I got. We covered all of my notes. I am really intrigued to keep reading. This one has really opened up a lot of questions right off the bat and had a massive hook to start off this story. What is going on here? I have got to know.
I agree. It feels really fun to spin these types of theories again. It's really fun to play off of this. I didn't think we would gather infer as much information as we have based off of these first two chapters, but we've run a long way with that.
I mean, my plan might be obvious at this point, but that's kind of why I wanted to format the episode like we did, where all you get is chapters 1 and 2, and then we really dive in deep. So let's reconvene next week. We're going to be doing 3 through 11 for anyone following along with us. So let's take those for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Ilya.
On we go.
Bye.